This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I'm not going to profess to you that 4 weeks ago that we knew what was going on. Absolutely not. The Tories have had their grip on this thing for 28 years. We've come in new, fresh-faced, new experience. You know, we've got some skills in areas, but career politicians, that's not where we are. So we've had to move some things. They're happening in July, and we look forward to working in every sector possible to stand up and to look after and serve the people of Kent.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In the week where a council was forced to take action over a giant fibreglass elephant, KCC was accused of wasting money on illegal migrants, and Kent Online's Blue Badge Battle campaign picked up pace. I'm Senior News Editor Nikki White, standing in for regular host Simon Finlay, who is away this week, and I'm joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway Council.
Hello.
And Senior Editor Matt Ramsden, who will be talking us through what's been happening at KCC.
Hello.
We're also joined by reporter Ellie Hodgson for an update on Kent Online's Blue Badge Battle campaign.
Hello.
This week's special guest is Reform Councillor Maxwell Harrison, who represents Sheppey on KCC. He will be talking about his journey into politics and giving us his views on DOGE and other goings-on at County Hall. He'll be chatting to Robert a little later on. So, Rob, what have you been looking at in Medway this week?
This week, a giant elephant. Or rather, the place where a giant elephant was. Regular visitors to the Strand Lido in Gillingham will know there was an 8-foot-tall, 6-foot-wide, 20-foot-long elephant slide, which was recently removed after 30 years due to safety concerns. Twiddle resident Trevor Robinson happened to be there when subcontractors were removing the fibreglass beast and convinced them, rather than taking it off to be destroyed, to bring it around to his house instead.
So why did he want it?
Well, Trevor is a self-professed hoarder and has a garden and house chock-a-block with things he's found over the years. He wanted to put the elephant in his back garden as a centrepiece, but quickly found it was too big and too heavy to carry around the side of his house. He then hatched a plan to get a crane to lift it over, but unfortunately for him, Medway Council got word their slide hadn't been disposed of as had been agreed and sent it round to be hauled away, much to the relief of neighbours.
They didn't appreciate the new resident then?
No, many I spoke with said it'd be fine if it had been quickly got into the back garden, but this was never really realistic as a crane wouldn't be able to lift it over as there were power lines and things like that. So it was just sitting on the front drive for 2 months. They called it an eyesore and a monstrosity and said it was seriously unsafe, especially considering it began to attract children from the nearby schools. Medway Council said it wasn't supposed to have been there and was decommissioned from the Strand because of lack of safety and so had to be hauled away to the fibreglass elephant slide graveyard.
Thanks, Robert. Welcome, Matt. So in Simon's absence, you've been keeping an eye on County Hall. What's the latest?
Yeah, well, we had some DOGE-related developments this week with Reform Zia Yusuf tweeting and chatting to the media about claims KCC had spent money on jollies for what were termed illegal migrants.
What were these so-called jollies?
He claimed tens of thousands of pounds of KCC cash had been spent on TV licences, bowling, trampolining and trips to the cinema. But there was a catch.
Go on.
We put the claims to Kent Online's new columnist, the KCC Insider, and asked what was going on. It turns out the money would have been for youngsters who arrived as unaccompanied asylum-seeking children and not adults, who are the responsibility of the Home Office. KCC has a legal responsibility to care for some children who arrive in the county, but the money is claimed back from central government. It costs Kent nothing.
So although the cost isn't being met by Kent, there is an argument that the UK taxpayer is paying, though.
Yeah, there sure is. But the KCC Insider makes the point that if people are upset with that, they should take it up with the government and not the council. They just say they're following the rules. The Insider says that with DOGE's claims, the devil's always in the detail.
Thanks, Matt. So, Ellie, welcome back to the podcast. Now, you're the reporter who's leading Kent Online's Blue Badge Battle campaign, something we updated our listeners on last week. But you have some exciting news about it, I hear.
Yes, that's right. Since I attended a meeting in Westminster with the Shadow Transport Secretary, Gareth Bacon, back in May, a lot of progress has been made. After Mr Bacon backed Kent Online's campaign, I contacted every MP in Kent to ask them to join Helen Grant, Tris Osborne and Mike Martin by supporting our battle to make the blue badge system fairer. And by the 6th of June, every MP in Kent had pledged their support. That's 18 MPs in total. Since then, we've sent a letter to the newly elected leader of Kent County Council, Lyndon Kemp-Caron, and the leader of Medway Council, Vince Maple, to ask them to introduce a discretionary blue badge style scheme for cancer patients and those with other life-altering but time-limited conditions. We have already had a positive discussion with Councillor Maple about his thoughts and whether it's something Medway could introduce.
What would a discretionary scheme look like?
So what we're pushing for is a fair and compassionate local policy. So this could be in the form of a formal discretionary blue badge process for temporary or severe short-term conditions, or it could mean a parallel local badge scheme, such as a different coloured badge, tailored to residents undergoing life-altering treatments. At the moment, we are waiting to hear back from both council leaders, but it's hoped a local scheme in Kent could deliver critical support more quickly to some of the county's most vulnerable constituents. But it's also worth noting that those behind the campaign are also calling on the national government to bring forward secondary legislation that would help patients across the UK. So while we're starting locally, we're looking at how improvements to the blue badge system could be felt across the country.
Thanks, Ellie, and keep up the good work.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
At just 25, Maxwell Harrison is one of the youngest councillors at KCC, having been elected in the Reform landslide of May 1st. As well as serving the constituents of Sheppey Division, he is also Deputy Cabinet Member for Communications and Engagement. Maxwell, welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Good afternoon, thank you for having me on.
So you started your political career at quite a young age. Mm-hmm. What led you into it and why Reform in particular?
Well, back in 2021, I got an adverse reaction from the COVID-19 vaccination. Now, it was a very rare adverse reaction, only happens to 1 in 10,000 people. And I know that I was very unlucky. I know that the vaccine itself is safe and effective. However, in those preceding months and those couple of years that I was going through this, I received no treatment, no support. The NHS wasn't supporting me. It doesn't actually recognise COVID-19 vaccine injury. I was going through my local Member of Parliament at the time, no help or assistance. So I felt completely and utterly unheard, abandoned and isolated from, let's say, that political metric. And so I thought, you know, something's got to change about this. I was in favour of Brexit. I played my part at university when we had that Theresa May's awful deal, out and about campaigning. And so I thought I'd throw my hat in the ring. And I stood in the general election last year. I actually lost my job in the civil service for putting myself forward as a candidate for reform. Because I felt so strongly about this. I think it's very clear, whether young or old, the direction this country is going is the wrong direction. Things are getting worse. We're getting poorer. Our country is in decline. So yeah, I am young. I'm passionate about this country. I am totally supportive of all the growing numbers of, you know, Reform UK young members who are getting involved. And I hope I'm the first of many young people in Kent who believe in Reform UK and want their country back.
I mean, you mentioned that you're quite young. I mean, Reform is quite interesting. It's got some quite old members, but it's also got, as you say, a lot of very young members as well. To people who say, look at you and say, you know, you're elected at 25 years of age, you know, is that, are you the right person to have such responsibility in your position? What would you say to them?
I think what people want is ordinary people putting themselves forward for elections. We've had the same type of people in politics year after year, that sort of white, pale, male, stale sort of conservative candidates we've had at Kent County Council, and people want change. And yes, I'm young, I'm vibrant, I think I'm quite charismatic, and I think that offers a lot. I have a clean slate. I haven't been bought by businesses, I don't have my own agendas. I come here to serve people, to listen to them, and actually act as they want me to act. So yes, you can argue that my youth might not have a lot of experience, but what I do bring is passion, enthusiasm, and a heck of a lot of excitement.
So the role that I mentioned in the intro is you're the Deputy Cabinet Member for Communications and Engagement. Yep. What does that actually entail?
It's really about how we get our message across to Kent County Council as an organisation rather than a political force into residents' lives. We know that very few people are subscribed to our newsletters. We know, look at social media, people don't interact with our posts as much as they should compared to other county councils across the country. So we're actually trying to share the good work that Kent County Council does. I know a lot of people are talking about how reform wants to bring in the chainsaw, cut Kent County Council apart. We know that their commentary is out there. But actually, there are a lot of good people who work at Kent County Council. They do a heck of a good job. And actually, the work that we do is really important. The services that we provide to residents is crucial and critical. And so absolutely, my work on that particular department is to ensure that we are sharing the good news about what Kent County Council is doing and making us a democratic organisation once again.
I mean, you mentioned that Doji is getting a lot of the
attention. Is it really?
Yes.
Is it really? I haven't heard that.
But obviously there's a lot of sort of, some people are very against it, some people are very for it.
Yeah.
In terms of what is actually going on, what is the Doge team doing right now? And what does that mean for Kent County Council?
It's about political will. I know a lot of people are saying that, you know, Doge is in, but we've already had the auditors. You can go online. This is about a new, fresh pair of eyes looking at actually how this thing runs. I'm not saying that we're going to get a chainsaw and cut this thing apart, but we were elected on the 1st of May. Overwhelmingly, you know, from this time last year, we had 12 months ago, we now have 56 Kent County Councillors. So we got a big part to play. We want to make sure that, you know, Kent residents are getting value for money and they want fresh eyes. Things may not be perfect. The point of Doge, I understand, is criticisms about Elon Musk, etc. in America. But over here, what it wants to do is make sure that councils run effectively and efficiently, which they haven't done for many, many years and decades now.
My understanding is that the Doge team with Zia Youssef and others is that they're going to go through all the books and look through everything, and then we'll present what they think possibly could be reduced or cut or whatever to Lyndon Kemp-Caron and your fellow councillors for you to decide what to actually do. Is that a right estimation of what?
Yes and no. I mean, we have got our own cabinet member, Matthew Fraser-Moat, who is our Doge cabinet member. Him and his team going through all the contracts inside of Kent County Council, looking at all the financial aspects. And as you'll see online, Zia is doing a heck of a lot of commentary about Kent County Council, about things that may or may not be going on in that building. So we're doing two attack lines, really. We've got head office in London with Zia at the helm, bringing in some heavy artillery in experts in finance, in data. And we're using our own skills and talents in our ranks in Reform UK locally. So we've got two lines of attack, and we are going to meet in the middle. And in a couple of weeks' time, we are going to blow you away. Let me tell you that.
What do you mean? What sort of things are you finding
so far? Let's see. But I guarantee you, in a couple of weeks' time, there's going to be a big announcement in Kent, and we are going to expose everything that's been going on in that place.
I mean, how is it going so far? Because obviously it was well documented a couple of weeks ago that Zia Youssef and Nathaniel Fried left Reform and Doge and stepped back, and they came back a couple of days later. Was that sort of a bit embarrassing that this sort of internal fighting was sort of taking the headlines?
No, I don't think it's internal and fighting at all. This guy has been working unpaid for months upon months. When I stood in the general election last year, there was no infrastructure. None. You know, I was out leafleting the first couple of days by myself, thousands of leaflets, which I had to design myself completely alone. We now have all these branches. We have 18 out of 18 in Kent and over 400 across the country. You know, we have built up an empire and a structure wherein we are now winning by-elections up and down the country. That couldn't have happened without Zia Youssef. So he has been integral to this party. He hasn't had a holiday. He hasn't had a break. He had made an intemperate comment, which we can all do, particularly when, you know, in politics, you know, as we all know, it's very, very high-pressured. And he made a mistake. He regretted it. And of course, we welcomed him back because he is a talented individual. We've got a massive part to play in public service in this country. So no, it wasn't infighting. It wasn't embarrassing. When I saw the announcement, I sort of knew he would be back in some form. Now he's not chairman. He's focusing all his efforts on Doge. I look forward to working with him in the coming weeks, months and years ahead.
Now, this week, there was a story about Doge apparently discovering that KCC had been paying for illegal migrants to get TV licences and go out on these fun trips, bowling and mini golf and things like that. But when we checked, that wasn't really the case. It was asylum seeking children in reception centres, and any money spent will be reimbursed by the government. Is Reform more interested in those quick headlines than the actual details of why local authorities spend the way they do?
So that came from head office, from Zia. And I saw the tweet myself. I know it comes from his sudden budget, but do you know what it has achieved? We're actually asking the questions about what's going on in Kent County Council, where the money's going from. That, I think, is important to your listeners. I think that's what's important to residents across Kent, that actually we are actually exposing, having some level of transparency. This conversation you and I are having would never have happened under the Tories. So is it completely in line with what may or not be going on in Kent County Council? I wouldn't comment. But are we talking about it? Absolutely. Our team, particularly our team in Kent County Council with Matthew and Lyndon and the team, we are making sure that everything that we put out there is spot on, is absolutely accurate. If Zia wants to get a headline, at least we're talking about it.
But, I mean, that's... Yes, I agree that in terms of maybe we should be having the discussion, but if you're leading people, there'll be people who will not follow up with this discussion and they will just see that people, you know, we're paying for TVs for asylum seekers. That's not really very honest, is it? You're misleading some people.
No, it's honest because it's the truth. What's going on is that we are paying out of our asylum budget for people who arguably should not be in this county to have benefits that residents simply don't have. Now, where that money's coming from, we can dispute, and Zia's put out his tweet. I can't comment on what Zia's been doing. But what I can say is that we are gearing up for a general election. Mark my words, this general election is not happening in 2029. It's going to happen much, much sooner. Our battle line's been drawn very clearly. Our Doge team, we're going to expose everything that happened under the Tories under 28 years of decline, while Zia and his team will make sure that we are highlighting the errors in big government, in our state, in this Labour administration, and we're all going to go guns a-blazing to win this thing.
What makes you think there's going to be a general election before 2029?
Are you just seeing the poll just come out? Labour are now third place. They're now 21 points, Reform at 29. Two polls last week had us at 30, 31%. His position is untenable. I mean, this has got to be the most unpopular Prime Minister this country's ever had. I think last week I saw data that showed in his first few hundred days or so, actually he's even below Tony Blair, Theresa May, even Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson, if you can even dare to imagine it. So I think his position is totally and utterly untenable. When we see the boat crossings, the data coming out in the next few weeks and months ahead, where we were getting thousands a day, and it won't just be a few hundred, I think there will be days where we are eclipsing over 1,500 very soon, particularly going into the end of July and August. I think the people of this country have simply had enough. We will win big in Wales next year. We're going to win big in Scotland. And I think at that point, Labour Party has got to have some sort of crisis meeting because it cannot continue any further.
But that none of that means there'll be a general election before 2029. In fact, surely it would mean that if Keir Starmer continues as leader, he will want to, you know, leave the general election as long as possible.
They're going to get rid of him. They will, you mark my words, they will absolutely get rid of him. Then you've got Angela Rayner, lovely woman, I'm sure, but is she Prime Minister material? Absolutely not. I mark my words, I predicted the general election, snap election last year when lots of people laughed at me on Talk TV. You mark my words, this Prime Minister, his days are numbered.
Something else which has been noticed about KCC is that this month, 9 meetings are either cancelled or postponed, with the Health Committee, the Police and Crime Panel, and even the Governance and Audit meeting being cancelled. What's going on? Why is this happening?
Well, we've just got a massive mandate from the people of Kent, over 170,000 votes. Many of us have never actually been elected before. So we need that relevant training. We need to ensure we understand how this machine works. Again, a lot of criticism about reform and this idea of Doge is that we're going to come in with a chainsaw, cut it apart with no expertise, understanding whatsoever. We've got to get to grips on how this thing runs. I'm not going to profess to you that 4 weeks ago that we knew what was going on. Absolutely not. The Tories have had their grip on this thing for 28 years. We've come in new, fresh-faced, new experience. You know, we've got some skills in areas, but career politicians, that's not what we are. So we've had to move some things. They're happening in July, and we look forward to working in every sector possible to stand up and to look after and serve the people of Kent.
And, you know, obviously, as you say, Reform won this big majority back in May. Yeah. Are you already sort of on the streets of your constituency or your ward, rather, meeting people who are saying they're already pleased with the work that you've been doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big crucial things for us on the Isle of Sheppey is that we had a school allocation problem wherein over 30 to 40 children have not been allocated school placement come this September. I've been working very hard, credit where credit's due, with the sitting born Sheppey MP, Kevin McKenna. We had a great meeting, very positive meeting. I've been speaking with Dolly Worcester, but both myself and Isabella Kemp, the other councillor, we're trying to make sure that we are putting the people of Sheppey first, making sure these children have got places. And these people are really appreciative that we're putting this on. I mean, tomorrow We've got a meeting. We're dragging the cabinet member for education and skills all the way from County Hall all the way to Sheppey. I don't think we've heard that one before on the Isle of Sheppey. So we are playing our part big time. I've spoken to residents. I'm really pleased with the work that we are doing. And actually, we're making sure that we are serving them. We're attending parish council meetings. We've got regular surgeries. We're making sure that residents know who we are, what we're doing, and where we are. And so I think we're pulling a blinder.
So obviously, there's a lot going on at the moment, but to look forward to the future, I mean, you've mentioned that you're fairly confident the reform will do well in the next general election. What about you personally? I mean, are you intending to stand in that general election for a parliamentary seat you did previously?
Yes, I will, if I can, if I'm allowed to, by HQ, to stand in the general election. I would absolutely love to go for it. I think, you know, what's important, particularly for young people, is that we get that local government experience. Let's see where I am in the next 3 or 4 years' time. But the opportunity to stand up and represent people in Westminster, to have their voice heard, I would absolutely revel in the opportunity to do so.
And so am I speaking to a rising star of the reform movement, a future government minister in the reform government?
I wouldn't go that far, but what I would say is that I am thoroughly enjoying my time at reform. You know, we have got all the momentum in British politics. This is an incredibly exciting time and opportunity. We've got a lot of work to do, make no mistake. We've got some really big hurdles like local government reorganisation on the horizon. These are big challenges we've got to face. But am I enjoying the opportunity right now of being elected or representing people of Sheppey? Absolutely.
Maxwell Harrison, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, there are a couple of talking points which came up in the news this week which are worthy of discussion. First off, can you believe the cost of using the Dartford Crossing is going up again? From September, the standard charge for a car will jump from £2.50 to £3.50. Matt, what do you think?
Well, it's quite interesting that the news came in the week that the government revealed it's going to give £590 million towards the nearby £10 billion Lower Thames Crossing, a project that can't come soon enough. With Dartford, I think people understand that you have to pay for infrastructure to be maintained. But the operator behind Dart Charge will be making a tidy profit for something people were told would be free after the building costs were paid for in 2003. It does stick in the throat a little.
And what do you think, Robert?
Well, I mean, as Matt says, it's kind of a case of the cost of running it will likely have increased because obviously inflationary pressures that are felt everywhere. But obviously, I use the Dartford Crossing fairly regularly and I'm not particularly pleased about the increase in price, and I can't imagine a lot of other people are either.
No, I mean, it does feel that the cost of living is going up, and this is yet another thing. It's not great if you've got to travel that way, as many people do. And finally, we can't leave this podcast without ending where we began with Robert's elephant story. Rob, how much sympathy do you have for this gentleman concerned?
Well, I mean, I'm a bit of column A, column B in terms of support and being against, in terms of, yes, on the face of it, it does sound like quite a fun thing to have in your back garden of this giant elephant. But I think it was sat on the front drive for 2 months, and there was really, I mean, I went down to the house in person and saw it wasn't really realistic that a crane would be able to lift the pieces over the top of this house and get it in place. So I think the likelihood is it would have just sat on that drive forever had Medway Council not been alerted to the fact that, I mean, he shouldn't have had it anyway, because Medway Council, you know, paid for it to be taken away to a tip to be completely gotten rid of. One of the residents did say to me what I think probably sums up my view, which is it's very nice to drive by and see it and go, oh, look at that funny elephant. But to live next door to it, I wouldn't really enjoy that, I don't think.
No, I'm not sure many of us would. It would have become quite a good local landmark to direct people. But I'm not sure I'd want to be sat in my front room looking out at it. But Matt, what about you?
Oh, God. Can you imagine? You're living next door to that. I mean, I'm all for having a bit of a laugh and a bit of fun. I don't want to seem too pious. But I think the council has done the right thing here. I mean, first of all, it's their property. We say paid to be thrown away. It turns up on this bloke's driveway and it's a monstrosity. I think it's as bad as those people that leave their Christmas lights up all year round and ruin your house prices. Good riddance.
Okay, well, on that note, that's your lot for this week. Thank you to Rob, Ellie and Matt for their contributions. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. You can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m.
or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.